That apple from New Zealand sitting in a Berlin hotel. Your morning coffee from Ethiopia. The cotton shirt made in Bangladesh. We barely notice these everyday miracles anymore. Yet 2,000 years ago, when Emperor Elagabalus strutted through Rome draped entirely in Chinese silk, he wore the equivalent of a year's wages for an ordinary worker. That weightless fabric had survived bandits, corrupt officials, disease-ridden caravans, and thousands of miles of treacherous terrain. Today, we complain when Amazon takes 3 days to deliver. Trade has always been humanity's most audacious gamble, risking everything to move goods across impossible distances. What drove merchants to sleep atop their cargo on disease-infested ships? Why did they choose maritime routes that cost 10 times less per mile than overland travel, despite floating through what were essentially cesspools? The answer reveals something fundamental about human nature. We're the only species that systematically exchanges goods across vast distances. This instinct didn't just shape commerce, it built civilizations, toppled empires, and ultimately created the interconnected world we inhabit today. 20,000 years ago, hunger, not romance, drove humanity's first maritime ventures when hunters discovered boats gave them an advantage over swimming reindeer. By 12,000 years ago, obsidian from Melos Island reached Greece's Franthi Cave, 100 miles offshore. Using atomic fingerprinting, researchers traced obsidian throughout Mesopotamia, finding a clear pattern. The farther from Armenian volcanic sources, the less obsidian appeared, prehistoric trade in action. Around 6,000 years ago, mankind learned to purify copper ore, establishing a pattern defining global economics. Fertile regions exchanged grain for metals from less arable lands. By 3500 BC, Sumerians discovered mixing copper with tin created superior bronze. Tin became extraordinarily valuable, priced 10 times higher than copper. When archaeologists discovered the 1350 BC Uluburun shipwreck off Turkey in 1983, they found tin and copper ingots in the perfect 10-to-1 ratio, sophisticated international commerce operating across continents before written contracts existed. Around 1500 BC, specialized saddles transformed camels into premier desert pack animals, carrying 500 to 1,000 pounds each, enabling the lucrative incense trade from Arabia Felix, modern Yemen. Ancient elites obsessed over frankincense and myrrh because in cities lacking sanitation, myrrh oil masked odors while serving as lotion, medicine, and embalming fluid. Frankincense's smoke pleased the gods as it rose to heaven. Greece's poor soil forced Athens to import grain through the Dardanelles and Bosphorus choke points, making these straits vital to survival. This vulnerability shaped Athenian strategy and empire building. When Spartan Admiral Lysander destroyed their fleet at Agos Batami in 405 BC, he severed grain supplies and forced surrender. Athens never recovered, becoming history's first world power transformed into an open-air theme park. This established Western naval strategy's core principle: control maritime choke points. Venice, Holland, and England would follow this playbook. Asian powers, accustomed to the Indian Ocean's open waters, failed to grasp this lesson, a catastrophic oversight when cannon-wielding Europeans arrived obsessed with controlling narrow passages. The incense trade catalyzed Islam's birth in Western Arabia, positioned between Yemen's producers and Mediterranean consumers. The Quraysh tribe grew wealthy taxing traders and selling safe conduct. Muhammad, orphaned young, worked for Khadija, a wealthy widow running a trading enterprise. After impressing her as her Syrian agent, they married. Through his travels, Muhammad encountered Jews and Christians whose monotheism influenced him as he witnessed Mecca's commercial elite abandoning tribal values. Islam's commercial foundations are unmistakable. Muhammad and successor Abu Bakr were both traders, and the Quran contains numerous trading references, making Islam perhaps history's most commerce-friendly religion from inception. The plague bacillus lives quietly in animal reservoirs. Populations of chronically infected rodents, like the tarabagan, an obese squirrel-like creature weighing up to 18 pounds. For millennia, steppe inhabitants avoided infected rodents, but when outsiders hunted these animals, the disease barrier shattered. Plague is fundamentally a disease of trade, requiring rapid transport networks since infected humans live only days. At Kaffa in 1346, Mongol attackers catapulted infected corpses into the besieged city, history's most devastating bioterrorism attack. Between 1347 and 1350, plague killed approximately 1 in 3 Europeans. Here's what most people miss. China, India, Persia, and the Middle East suffered equally catastrophic losses. The destruction of Egypt's trading structure, disappearance of the Mongols, and China's withdrawal from the Indian Ocean created a vacuum. Europe, barely standing but still intact, eagerly filled it. Around 1440, Venetian merchant Niccolò de Conti sought papal absolution after converting to Islam under duress. His accounts of Sri Lankan cinnamon trees and Sumatran pepper fields helped guide future exploration. Vasco da Gama's 1497 to 1499 journey covered 28,000 miles to reach India's Calicut. His nautical preparation was excellent, but his commercial planning was disastrous. When da Gama sent gifts, cloth, hats, coral, sugar, and honey, the ruler's retainers howled with derision. Europe had mastered navigation, but remained amateurs in global trade, a gap they'd close through superior firepower. The Dutch East India Company, VOC, emerged after Philip II's 1568 invasion sparked revolt in the northern provinces. When Philip captured Antwerp in 1585, Protestant traders fled to Amsterdam, exploding its population from 30,000 to 105,000 by 1622. The Netherlands' success stemmed from advanced financial institutions. In 1600, Dutch per capita GDP was $2,175 versus England's $1,440, while interest rates were 4% versus England's 10%. Dutch merchants divided ship ownership into fractions as small as 64ths, spreading risk. They refined futures markets and maritime insurance, reducing commercial risk and lowering capital costs. John Pieterszoon Koen, trained in double-entry bookkeeping, analyzed the VOC's poor profitability and proposed a ruthless solution: monopolize nutmeg, cloves, and mace by exploiting locals and importing slave labor. The VOC targeted the Banda Islands, tiny Moluccan specks that were the world's only source of nutmeg and mace. This corporate imperialism would define 3 centuries. After 1700, armed trading monopolies over exotic spices gave way to mass-market commodities like coffee, sugar, tea, and cotton that could be transplanted across continents, requiring demand stimulation rather than supply control. Coffee spread rapidly through Paris via Armenian vendors who established permanent cafes like the famous Procope, 1686. By 1700, London had become Europe's coffee capital, reflecting Britain's commercial ascendancy. Cotton cemented British dominance as the East India Company revolutionized commerce by actively manipulating consumer tastes rather than merely responding to demand, inventing both the fashion industry and modern consumer society. The 1721 ban on Indian cloth spurred British innovation, and by the mid-1760s, mechanical spinning machines had revolutionized production. Sugar transformed the Caribbean into extraordinary wealth. Barbados became one of the world's wealthiest places by 1660. Between 1519 and the 1860s, 11 million Africans began the journey to the New World. About 9.5 million survived the horrific Middle Passage, industrialized human exploitation on an unprecedented scale. William Jardine epitomized the ambitious traders transforming Eastern commerce. While the English craved tea, the self-sufficient Chinese desired little from England. The English paid with silver, an unsustainable situation. Enter opium. The East India Company established strict quality control while using private traders like Jardine to smuggle it into China. When Chinese authorities cracked down in 1839, war erupted. The 1842 Treaty of Nanking awarded Britain compensation, opened 5 treaty ports, and granted extraterritoriality. This was armed drug dealing backed by naval power, When economic interests clash with moral considerations, firepower often determines the outcome. World trade gravitates toward efficient labor and capital deployment. History proves the bartering instinct can't be suppressed. Today, 80% of commerce flows by sea through seven critical passages, with petroleum remaining the most vulnerable cargo. Free trade enthusiasts overstate benefits. 19th century America thrived despite high tariffs. Yet post-1960 evidence strengthened for developing nations, always open countries, averaged 17,521 GDP in 2006 versus 2,362 for always closed ones. As Frederick Bastiat noted, when goods are not allowed to cross borders, soldiers will. Still, free trade creates losers. Low-skilled workers in developed nations suffer as American inequality rose sharply between 1970-2005. Historical irony abounds. India, once devastated by free trade, now benefits as American jobs move offshore. Like Churchill's democracy assessment, free trade may be the worst form except all others. That New Zealand apple, Ethiopian coffee, Bangladeshi shirt, they're humanity's oldest story. Connecting across impossible distances enriches us in wealth, ideas, and possibilities. Trade isn't perfect, but turning back risks the 20th century's darkest episodes.